Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark.
Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I'm your host, John Lossmith.
Is that your Michael Caine impersonation?
No, that's his impression of my great aunt Mildred, who smoked four packs a day for 30 years.
Oh, yeah. No, that's just my way of letting everybody know that there's just something weird about my voice today. It's like...
Hi, hon. It's Thursday night, so we're playing Canasta. It's your deal.
No, I've been singing this number all day. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's one of those days, I guess. Anyway, joining me, as always, are my lovely co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
You know, I watched Stargate again after probably 10 years of not watching it, and those weapons that those bird people have are really impractical.
Wait, what weapons?
Like, you mean they're spear guns that you need to jerk in order to shoot?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, they're shooting a ton of bullets at them, but they're basically just going for headshots. Like, one body shot would take them down, but these guys only shoot bullets at their heads. And like, it's just a big stick. Like, I guess it's good, like, you know, when they put a bayonet, when they did charges, you know, during the Civil War, World War I, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I guess they're good, like, in a battle, but they're not even good for, like, close range. And they only shoot, like, one per 10 seconds. So these are really pretty terrible weapons that these guys have.
Although, to be fair, still better shots than stormtroopers.
Yeah, I mean, but they once see stormtroopers, they have these little lasers that go pew 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 pew. Yeah. But like, at least when they shoot their guns, these silly bird people, there's like a big explosion.
Yeah. Ooh, can you imagine if a stormtrooper tried to shoot one of those things?
I mean, it would be chaos. Like, things would be blowing up all over the place.
Yeah. Independence Day level chaos.
The stormtrooper's got a gun.
John, I'm good. What was your favorite part of Stargate?
Boy, you know, the most memorable part anyway has got to be... My favorite part is when he teaches the kid how to use a Zippo. But the most memorable part is when Ra first comes out. Because for the first 10 years of that movie's existence, I thought that Ra was a girl.
Yeah.
Because his breast... Because he's like a very, like... like hairless guy, and he's got this breastplate, right, that basically goes up to like cover the nipple mark, like a medieval corset. Well, not medieval, but like an Egyptian corset. And his hair is so nice and his skin is so good. Like, I thought that Ra was a girl until like I was in my mid-20s.
Well, he was also in Jay Davison was also in The Crying Game. And I guess
was that guy?
Yeah.
The guy who was the girl that was the guy?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, Stargate's an interesting movie when you watch. Like, when I was younger, and then I was watching it again. I'm like, who lets these, like, there's, like, 12-year-old kids that are like, I don't want to get into it. But, like, I'm like, why would these parents allow this? Like, it's, like, a really weird movie. Kurt Russell's great. And James Spader is, like, so young and he has too much hair. But, like, watching Stargate again, I'm like, what is this movie? Like, you got bird people with terrible weapons.
It's amazing. That's what that
is. You got French Stewart acting tough. Like, this movie is, like, when you watch it and then watch it 20 years later, your world just explodes.
It's amazing, too. Like, because that movie, I think that came out in 94?
Yeah, and it spawned, like, 300 television episodes.
So that movie, though, is now 22 years old. Dude, we are old.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was one of the first movies I rented. Yeah, it's crazy.
What's that?
It's one of the first movies I remember renting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good old Stargate with silly bird people. Jaimin Huntsu's in it as a henchman.
Yeah, one of those soldiers. Because yeah. I just saw it about a week ago. It was on one of the HBOs or Cinemaxes or something, and I just flipped it on and saw him. So, by the way, guys, so I was on Facebook recently, and I saw one of those movie website updates. And all this time, the new Predator movie by Shane Black, I thought that it was going to be a reboot. And now the latest articles are promising – they're saying that he's saying it's going to be a sequel.
Well, he listened to our podcast.
Well, yeah, because he heard my idea about Dan Aykroyd. Wait,
Dan Aykroyd.
No, we talked about him before with the John Cusack stuff. No, with Danny Glover and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And if y'all don't know what I'm talking about, there's like 20 or 30 episodes back, I went on like a 20-minute rant about Danny Glover present day and Arnold Schwarzenegger present day.
It wasn't an idea. You wrote a script. Like, this wasn't like, hey, guys, I got an idea, and you pitch it to us in two sentences. Like, you had a notebook, and you were, like, licking your finger to flip the pages. That's, like, how many you were, like...
I think that I recited more words to you guys in that podcast episode than most scripts have when it first hits Facebook, and they're like, there's a script for Iron Man 8. It's like there's really 30 words on a page. I had more than that.
But all of our listeners and John and Lazarus and I are going to be annoyed because we already know the movie. So when it comes out, I'm going to be like, I know what's going to happen. You better get a script writing credit.
Are you kidding me? We can sue him because this our episode was published. It's got a timestamp.
John, timestamp it. Throw it on the floor.
Actually, iTunes timestamps it, but yeah, I'll tell him to do it.
I've asked this before, but why is there the throw it on the floor? Why is it the file it and throw it on the floor? Why do we throw it on the floor?
He doesn't have a filing cabinet. He just throws it on the floor.
So Lovely, I thought you would know since you're the historian of the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the historian, Levin Good.
I'm just going through the database.
Yeah.
Referring to an episode like 30 weeks ago when I was talking about Predator 4. Well, I hope they don't call it Predator 4.
Predator Quattro.
Yeah. All right,
Predator
guys.
Mach 4.
It's time to start the podcast like we do every podcast. They answer some listener questions. Let me
wait. So the answer is a question?
What's up?
All right. First question comes from a someone who has become a serial listener question provider. Not quite Chris Kelly status, though. This is from Jesse from Camden County, New Jersey. And he asks, what actor has looked the worst or stupidest in a goatee?
All right. So I'm looking at movie goatees right now. And I have a theory. All right. When you have hair in a goatee, it looks good. So think about De Niro in Heat, right? Like, he looks awesome. De Niro's goatee in Heat is probably the greatest thing goatee ever. Or Norton with his hair in a goatee. Denzel in Training Day with his goatee. But when you're bald and you have a goatee, that's when things go haywire. So I'm going to say Vin Diesel in A Man Apart. He has this, like, you know, he's completely
bald. Scraggly looking.
Yeah, he's completely bald. He's bald, but he has a goatee. Or like Sam Worthington from that movie Sabotage. He's bald and has a goatee. Like, I just think balds and maybe except for Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad or Ben Kingsley. But for the, like, you know, but they're distinguished. I think you need to have a little bit of hair to pull it off. So I'm going with Vin Diesel in A Man Apart because it's just like, it's not, you know, some people, it just feels like Vin Diesel acting with a goatee. It just doesn't work for me. Like,
he's acting through a goatee.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, what should I do to show that I'm depressed? Sulk, be sullen, morose. And then some guy in the corner is like, grow goatee. And they're like, what'd you say? Grow goatee. And then, like, he thinks that he's about to get fired. And Vin Diesel's like, greatest idea ever. And then he got fired after the movie because they saw the movie and saw his goatee. So I'm going with Vin Diesel, A Man Apart.
So, you know, I'm sorry, but it's like I almost want to think of this as when bad goatees happen to good actors. Because the first thing I thought of was Michael Shannon from Man of Steel.
I was more worried about the Caesar cut.
That was bad. No, that was also bad. Everything about that was bad. And don't get me wrong, like, they were trying to make him look like an interstellar douchebag, I think. But, like, that goatee he had, it made me think of, like, all the people I knew in high school who could grow a really thick goatee but could not grow a mustache to save their life. So they'd have this really, really thick, well manicured and edged goatee, and then their upper lip would be totally shaved. And it just, it's like a cross between a Mennonite and a clubber.
Yeah. And it breaks my heart because Michael Shannon can do no wrong to me, for me. So, like, seeing this haircut, Caesar cut, and goatee on him just kind of breaks my heart.
It wasn't his choice, I'm sure.
Well, would he say no, though? Like, let's say you're Zack Snyder, you're doing Superman or whatever, Man of, you know, boringness and CGI blobs, and Michael Shannon shows up with a goatee.
Well, they couldn't have him clean shaven because he doesn't have a strong enough jaw, and he was playing an artificially buffed up character. So I think it would have hurt the character to not have facial hair. I'm really serious. I've thought about this. I thought about this when I saw the movie and hated that facial hair.
Interesting.
That was a turning point for you.
It's not that he has a weak jaw and chin. It's just that for the build that he was presenting in that movie, it, you know, that kind of puffed up, you know, padded, if you will, muscle build, like, it wouldn't have fit. His head wouldn't have fit on that properly. It'd be like taking a little G.I. Joe head and putting it on a He-Man action figure. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah. All right.
Mark's like, really, he's like, John is off the deep end. I'm trying to visualize it. Like, do I give him constructive criticism, or do I Baker act him and have him thrown in a mental asylum?
No, I'm trying to see it. You know what I mean? Like, because Michael Shannon has a big head.
Like, it's a narrow head. He has a tall, narrow head. It's like Ryan Reynolds' head. Except Ryan Reynolds' head gets bigger towards the top.
It's like a mushroom. That's what you're saying.
it's like a dreidel.
Oh, okay.
He's the next King Koopa. Is that King Koopa a mushroom?
Toadstool.
Toadstool. Yeah. Toadstool. I'm mixing up my
King Koopa was a turtle.
Hold on now. I feel like Lazabeth is silently judging me. I want to hear his choice so that I can judge him out loud.
And
don't say probably Ben Affleck from Chasing Amy, because that's too easy.
Oh, no. Anyway. I guess it barely qualifies as a goatee, but I go with John Travolta from Swordfish. Like, it's kind of like, to describe it to someone who's never seen it. Yeah, it's a soul patch, but not really. Like, it's more like a landing strip that he just, like, put on his face. And the thing is, like, it's very pretentious, you know? Yeah.
It's
like,
too pretentious. It's trying way,
like,
too hard.
You want to have facial hair, but at the same time, you don't, you know? So you have, like, this kind of narrow lane of, like, really well, like, well-groomed facial hair, like, on your chin. And it's just, like, it's very distracting, you know? Like, every scene he's in, I'm just like, oh.
Everything about his performance is distracting in Swordfish. And also, he has a goatee in that Paris movie with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, where he's the hitman. Yeah. And he's bald, and he has a dyed black goatee. And it just looks – all people – shouldn't have goatees, except if you're Bryan Cranston.
I just think
it was too thick. It was too wide on his face, too.
Yeah. It looked like carpet on his face.
Yeah.
I just want to say it's significant because in a movie where Halle Berry shows her boobs, the thing that's more distracting than that is his landing strip on his face.
That was the most gratuitous nudity, I think, ever. Like, the whole point of that movie was to advertise that scene. It was like Entrapment with Catherine Zeta-Jones, or like Amityville Horror with, you know, John's favorite Ryan Reynolds. Like, they just, like, they're like, I don't know about these movie guys. Like, we'll just focus on shirtless people.
I'm not complaining. It was a great scene. Yeah. That was a great 20 seconds. No, wasn't even 20 seconds.
You kept it, like, sexist ambivalent. Like, you made it Ryan Reynolds, too. Like, him without his shirt doing the wood chopping scene.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, I mentioned two women. I'm like, I guess this is starting to sound there. Then I was like, well, Ryan Reynolds, Amityville Horror.
I want to see Halle Berry.
That was the largest he ever was in any movie, and he was just the dad in a horror movie. Yeah. Well, no, the reason is because he was building up all that extra muscle for the other movies that came out in that time frame, and it was before he cut down to lean up.
I don't believe you. So he's like Tom Hardy from Warrior?
No, it's more like he's Tom Hardy as Bane before cutting down to Warrior. If the movies had come out in that order.
I got you.
Right. Okay.
All right. I got one more. And this is a returning listener that has a name like a Sith Lord.
Welcome Valek, back.
Valek Azagoth from the Silly and Spooky Chat Facebook page asks, since Wonder Woman has an invisible jet, does she ever lose it at the airport?
Yeah. Who here has looked for their car? I mean, Seinfeld, they lost their car in a parking garage. Who here has forgot where they parked?
Last episode ever, right?
Yeah, so we're in a pod. No, it was like towards the middle, I think.
Yeah.
But all right, so we're in a we're in a podcast. But just say yay or nay if you've misplaced your car in a parking lot. Yay.
Yay.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're
but my car was visible, I can only imagine if it was invisible how frequently it would happen.
Yeah. Like, so I mean, you're in the Atlanta airport, right? And you know, you drop it off, then you go to Sweetwater. You know, Wonder Woman has a couple beers. Then she go visit some like local place that's pretty nice. You know, then she comes back. She's a little tipsy. You know, she's had a few drinks. She has no idea where it is.
It sounds like the Marvel gods are intervening to keep her from getting a DUI.
Yeah. Wait, DC gods.
She's DC?
Yeah.
Come on, Levengood.
Yeah, Wonder Woman's DC.
You're going to lose your nerd cred really soon, Levengood.
So my answer, having no, okay, really, I don't know. It's not like I was alive then reading those comics. No one likes Wonder Woman anymore. So my answer was, though, like if you, regardless of whether or not she loses it, if she was to actually take that thing to the airport, right? So not like the Fantastic Four invisible jet where they kind of park it on top of buildings, but if she was taking this like it was her corporate jet and leaving it in an airport, like other planes wouldn't see it. So when they're taxiing in or taking off, like they might slam into it.
Yeah.
Like she might have, you know how like you come and you find that little dent in your car in a parking lot and you're like, who did this? Oh, they probably left. It's not worth it. Like some jerk just, you know, dinged my car. Like her invisible jet needs to be invisible to hide all the hideous marks on it.
Yeah, it's all banged up because people are walking into it and hitting it with like with gasoline trucks and like, you know, those little things that they take the luggage out with, like
even those are going to leave a dent. Yeah, I'm just like, I think that she would never put a dollar into that car. She's got no spinning rims. She's not tricking that thing out like what is it? Trick My Ride or whatever.
Pimp My Ride.
Yeah.
What is it called?
Pimp My Ride.
With Exhibit.
Pimp My Ride.
Man. Old. Your facts are getting interesting here. hey guys, hey, did you see that Indiana Jones movie with Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, and where they have the kid?
Oh, I love that movie.
Wasn't Tom Selleck supposed to be Indiana Jones?
It was Three Ninjas with Macaulay Culkin.
Hey, now.
I guess they are the same movie, Three Ninjas Strike Back and Home Alone.
And Indiana Jones, they're all basically the same movie. Yeah. Indiana Jones, the robbers invading the house are the Nazis.
That's right.
And the goods in the house are the Ark.
That's right.
That should be like an article that we write, like how Home Alone and Indiana Jones is basically the same thing.
The same film.
Lazabeth, what'd you come up with for her invisible jet?
I think that she doesn't lose it. She just loses the keys.
Like, does she? Because
like, the keys are also invisible, so it's just.
Just has the keys. She has the boop, boop, boop. Like, yeah. She can find it.
No, but yeah. How many times have you lost your keys? I lose my keys when I have my keys in my pocket. Yeah. So,
can you imagine if they were invisible?
I've not lost my keys.
You've what?
I've not lost my keys.
Like, no, I'm not saying like in ever like lost them. You had to get new ones. I'm saying like you're looking around the house.
I mean, for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So she's lost her keys.
It's worse for her because they're also invisible. So it's like, oh, great.
Hold on. Her outfit is so scant that there aren't many places her keys could be.
That's why she loses them a lot.
But you talked about her drinking. I think she left them on the bar and the bartender snagged them.
I think she probably has a carabiner that she puts them on.
Yeah. Well, here's a side question. So Wonder Woman has the invisible jet. Batman has the Batmobile. Wouldn't it be interesting if maybe for like for some extra money on the weekends they do a little Uber driving on the side? Who would you like to hire or like to hire for an Uber driver out of all these superheroes? I have an answer in mind, but I'm going to ask you guys first.
I guess, first off,
it can be Marvel or DC. It doesn't have to be like...
Wait, anybody could drive me around?
Any superhero, Marvel or DC, for your Uber driver.
Whoever Ryan Reynolds is playing.
So Deadpool and someone else's cab.
Even the Green Lantern.
Okay. Green Lantern would be pretty cool.
Louise. I think Captain America, because he would obey all the street laws.
Yeah.
You know, like, he would be like, I think he would be honest. He wouldn't try to take you the long way around. Like, you know, some cab drivers are kind of shifty.
Yeah.
Wait. When he, in the last Avengers movie, when he was riding his motorcycle, I can assure you he was not obeying street laws.
No, but if he had humans, he was trying to save all the humans.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah, gotcha. If we were in his cab.
Yeah. Point, okay. I mean, he would take the direct route. He would charge you fairly. He would, you know, I think he would be, he would keep his mouth shut. If anybody robbed you, you'd be safe. I just think practical speaking, I'm going with Captain America.
Yeah.
I'd want to go with Tony Stark. I think that he'd give the most entertaining and,
he would show up, ride. He would show up like your own suit to wear.
Yeah. And you'd probably get drunk too. He'd probably have like cocktails in the back.
Yeah.
Well, I remember that his corporate jet in the first Iron Man movie.
I love that scene. Yeah.
With Terrence Howard.
Yeah, that was the best.
That scene alone is the biggest reason I was upset Terrence Howard didn't return for part two when they got Cheadle. Cheadle's a wonderful actor, but still.
Well, if Cheadle was in that scene, it would have been great.
Oh, yeah. Too.
Yeah.
I love that idea. Like, I didn't see that coming in the theaters, that they were just like, that was a great touch. Him and
Ethan Hamilton. Can I say, most cinematically appropriate stripper pole scene in movie history. Because the stripper pole came out of the floor.
Ah.
Before it cut and the girls were dancing with them and they were giving them drinks, a stripper pole was rising out of the floor and then it cuts scene.
I love that someone built that in there. Maybe maybe Jarvis. I don't know. What do you got, Lazbeth?
Okay. So, couple runner-ups. Obviously, you have to go with Batman because it would be awesome to ride in Batmobile.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Stark. Tony Stark because I would love to ride in my own suit. One of the X-Men so I can ride the, I think it's called the Blackwing, right? The jet that they got. But no, I'm going with Nick Fury so I can ride in that awesome bulletproof SUV. Right? You could have like rockets like being shot at like a million
Godzilla
bullets.
Would step on it. You'd be fine.
No, you would drive away and the AC would still be working.
Yeah.
If the Batmobile took that damage, it wouldn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. If Fantastic Four's invisible jet or the X-Men's jet took that damage, it wouldn't work anymore. Like, if it just took half of it, it wouldn't work. But for some reason, his just kept going.
Yeah. And for me, AC is super important. So if I know that the AC will work no matter what, I'm hiring you as my Uber driver.
Hey, if you took a ride with Cable, are you going on a Cable car?
Oh, ouch.
Actually, he would just, like, teleport you, I think.
And Juggernaut, that'd be terrible.
He would just put you on his back.
That was an especially randomly added random question.
It was a random question on top of a random question.
Yeah, that's how we do it. Randomception.
That's right.
Right.
And that leads into our topic.
Right. What is a topic?
Which isn't really a topic. It's more of a random conglomerate of topics.
That's right. A trifecta of Uber random. Hey, get it, Uber?
A veritable cornucopia.
Of random. The randomness is poureth over.
Ooh. Calm down there, Attenborough.
Yeah, so we're sitting up in the Alps, and we're waiting for the random cheetah to come out.
Okay, but you don't sound like Attenborough. You sound like that Zombie Diaries.
Well, you've been sitting in the mountains for 3 months. You're going to be bored as hell, too. On planet Earth, those guys set up those caves in Afghanistan waiting for that stupid snow leopard for, like, months. I'd be like, yeah. Stupid snow leopard. Even though that almost made me cry watching that scene. When I saw Planet Earth with that snow leopard
going through the, or the, whatever leopard it was, mountain leopard, I don't know. I almost started crying. I loved Planet Earth. I'm getting emotional. Ever since I saw Take Shelter and I cried, ever since then, it's like open up the floodgates.
Wasn't that narrated by Sigourney Weaver?
No! The American version was. I guess it was. But I have the Attenborough. I don't have the Weaver.
Wait, I thought Oprah narrated that, the American version.
Wait, but what did I? Yeah, Oprah did.
There's Planet Earth.
Sigourney Weaver narrated something, and then Oprah narrated something.
Planet Earth.
I think Ryan Reynolds should narrate one of these.
Oh, brother.
As Deadpool.
Yeah.
You mean as himself?
Deadpool fans. All right, so okay, today's
very random today.
So today's,
this is the random podcast.
That's right. So today's topic, there's going to be three of them. And the first one is a post of mine that I wrote this year that actually really did well on Reddit. The Independent picked it up. They called us Movies, Films, and Netflix, so I had to email them and be like, hey, guys. But this is like a random post that I've actually noticed this for years and years and years, and I've been making jokes about it, and I actually finally wrote it this year. And it's called The Bad Guy in the Cigarette, Analyzing the Villainous Smoking Choices of John Travolta. And I noticed this during Broken Arrow, but I'm going to kind of break down the random bad guy villainous smoking of John Travolta. So most like bad guys need quirks. You know, Blofeld had his cats. Stansfield from The Professional had his drugs. Hans Gruber, You're the Man, Alan Rickman, was very articulate. But when John Travolta – oh, I just snotted. When John Travolta plays a villain, he grows terrible facial hair and he smokes cigarettes in really weird ways. And throughout his films, it progressed. I'll start with Pulp Fiction. So in Pulp Fiction –
You just said it progressed. So, like, this is starting when he had no facial hair then.
Yeah. So, Pulp Fiction, this is like the classic cool Tarantino smoking. If you're smoking cigarettes in a Tarantino movie, I don't care who you are, Hugh Grant, you are going to look awesome. And in Pulp Fiction, Travolta, I mean, it's just like he was great in Pulp Fiction and he mixed up his smoking style and it worked perfectly with his hitman character. Like whether he used his thumb pointer finger style or reverted to like the quirky pointer middle finger scissor style, it worked. So when you first meet him, he's kind of using his thumb in the pointer finger style. Like he's just kind of doing like a cool smoke. Like, you know, if you kind of, you know, thumb pointer finger, like he's just kind of, it looks cool. And he's talking.
I remember smoking like that 20 years ago.
Yeah. And like it's I know. And when I put this on Reddit, some guys like, actually, the way he smokes in Pulp Fiction is how most people smoke. So he just looked cool smoking. Like there was nothing exaggerated by it. Of course, it's Tarantino, so it's exaggerated. And then in the $5 shake scene, the smoking is more relaxed. It isn't stylized. And it's more about like the actual ease of smoking. So he doesn't have anybody to impress. So he simply does the thumb pointer finger again. Actually, what early on, he's doing the middle finger, pointer finger, like the scissor type thing or the V. And then when he is doing the $5 milkshake, he's doing the thumb pointer finger. And he just looks relaxed. He's smoking a nice cigarette. He's complaining about $5 milkshakes. And it just looks cool. And people loved him in this movie. He was nominated for an Oscar. And see, the thing is, the smoking didn't make him cool. The writing and the direction and his performance made him cool. So I don't know why, but the next time he played a villain, he's like, well, I guess I smoked in Pulp Fiction, so I should smoke in this movie. And with every sequel or when something – like remember that time, John, when you wore that plaid shirt, Lazbeth, and everyone loved it? The next day you came back and you had an entire plaid outfit, plaid pants, shoes, shirt, hat, and everyone's like, it's too much?
Yeah, I'm just confused because I thought that's what everybody wanted.
Yeah. So, like – everyone thought he was cool in Pulp Fiction, so he's like, "Well, I'm going to be a villain again in Broken Arrow, so I'm going to turn it up to 11, and I'm going to be awesome." So, did you guys know? So Pulp Fiction, that's kind of like John, like you said, this is kind of just how people smoke cigarettes.
So, I don't agree with that guy's statement. I think that guy was being contrarian because it was Reddit. I think that's how the people who thought they were cool because they smoked. In the 90s. I don't think that regular smokers smoke that way now. Okay. I don't see that. Or at least I don't realize seeing that.
Has there been evolution in how you smoke?
So for a movie, it was stylized then, right?
I'd say so. And you know what? So In your article, you had given us some YouTube videos, and I watched the YouTube video of him in the $5 shake scene. And what I noticed is that, okay, the first thing I thought was there's nothing special about the smoking scene. And then after the scene ended, I realized, like, oh my God, for some reason, it made me think of Swingers, but not Swingers when they're all in their early 20s and they're trying to impress everybody. It made me think of a scene from Swingers when they've grown up and they've stopped trying to impress everybody. Like, I felt like that was the quintessential naturally cool cigarette instead of the trying to be cool cigarette. Because the next movie you're going to talk about, I feel like there's a lot of trying to be cool.
Yeah, I mean,
and a lot of other things that we're going to talk about with John Travolta's roles, there's a lot of trying to be cool. But him in that booth at that nice kitschy diner, that expensive LA diner, that was just pure natural liquefied cool poured over a bowl of cool.
Ooh, I like it. No, I agree. And so it worked. And his next movie is the action classic Broken Arrow. And I call this the inverted scissor V smoking. So
it sounds so sexual.
Yeah, like, yeah, it does. Well, the way he's doing
that,
it.
Or it makes me think of being inverted in Top Gun. Yeah. Like, it makes me think all sorts of things that have nothing to do with the movie.
So, like, you know, some characters smoke. Others allow the cigarettes to smoke them. So, like, I'm surprised that Travolta didn't cut his cigarettes in half as he hacked into them with his pointer and middle finger. So, like, he's not just holding them. Like, he's scissoring his – this man, I'm sounding really bad today. But he's, like, with his middle and pointer finger, he's, like, wham. Like, in real life, every cigarette would pop in half, right? So he's using his pointer and middle finger. And it's, like – I guess what it says is I'm the cool bad guy and it worked for me in Pulp Fiction. However, I've like turned it up to 11 and now it seems like an addiction. So like,
wait, did this movie come out about the same year almost?
I believe it was 90. It was 96. So it was two years later. So
this, like, made me think of Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
Andrew Dice Clay had a very aggressive smoking style and he was big into the early 90s. I wonder if he's channeling that.
Yeah. It's very aggressive and it becomes less of a prop and more of like a character trait. And so I would even say it's like a dangerous addiction. So like in this movie, when you first meet them, it's Christian Slater and Travolta and they're boxing, right? So they're boxing, blah, 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 blah. Later on in the locker room, Travolta starts smoking a cigarette right after boxing. He's blowing it in Slater's face. He's doing this, the inverted scissor V smoking. Like, it's pretty ridiculous, right? Then later on in the movie, you know, they crash, they do all this. So he crashes, right? When they find him, he's walking up a mountain smoking a cigarette, like very aggressively, all right? Then they get into a car.
While hiking. Increasing in altitude when there is less oxygen available.
Yeah, with no water whatsoever, right?
His already oxygen-starved lungs are being filled with smoke.
So he's smoking again, right? Then they get into a car and he kills a guy. And then he starts smoking again. Like, this is not, like, this is, like, how many fake cigarettes did he go through in this movie? Like, he smokes a lot of cigarettes every moment. How did he bring like extra packs in his jumpsuit? Because, all right, so how long does it take to smoke a cigarette?
6 or 7 minutes.
Okay. How long were they out there? 24 hours?
Sure.
Okay. So he's what, 240 cigarettes? Sure. He's not sleep. I don't know. Just I did that math real quick, but he must have like 7 packs in his jumpsuit. He's smoking the entire time, and like it's the same hack smoke. I call it hack smoke, and he's just smoking everywhere. And it's just like, I remember watching it and going like, you know, I was 14. And I'm like, I know this should be cool, but like this isn't cool. Like it just felt like an old man trying to be cool by smoking too much.
All right. So I'm that old guy who is proud of being old. I'm the grandfather, if you will, who doesn't want to learn how to use a computer ever. So I like the way that we do things. But for our younger viewers, every now and then I like to take a step back and explain a few things, because I have a feeling that some of our listeners have never heard of Broken Arrow. This movie is very old. I personally would not advise watching it. However, I would advise watching any YouTube videos you can find of John Travolta smoking in it. Yeah. Do you guys have any feelings to agree or disagree with that? I would say don't watch this old John Travolta movie, but watch videos of him smoking.
I mean, there's some cool shots. There's that scene where Christian Slater kicks Howie Long out of that train. It's like the quintessential 90s action film. That's just bonkers, violent, stylized.
But did you think it was good?
Well, I guess I watched it when I was 14, so it was perfectly serviceable. I haven't really watched it since, aside from seeing the clips. So, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't be like, guys, don't watch Casablanca. You know, don't watch The Graduate. Watch Broken Arrow.
Like I saw this within a year of it coming out. Like Lazabeth, you probably saw this movie, but when do you think you last saw it?
I think I probably watched it on TV, like HBO or Showtime, like that. Like probably like almost a decade ago, if I had to guess, maybe.
Because like I do remember enjoying it, but I have a feeling I'd hate it now.
So it just shows the progression of his smoking. So it was cool and natural in Pulp Fiction, and then it was nice and natural, and then he goes to Face Off and he just has an addiction, and the next one is Face Off and the brazen smoking, and this is the second best of all of his villainous smoking. Like it just looks like he wants to play darts with the cigarette. So the way you play darts, you know, just like pretend like you're playing darts.
Yeah, you bob your hand back and forth and a little bit.
And so that's the way he's holding his cigarette. And I've dubbed it brazen smoking because at the end of the scene, like he sits down in a chair, the cigarette's hanging from his lips, and he says, "I am the king." And then like I like it more than a Broken Arrow smoking because it actually serves a purpose. Like Travolta's like he's the bad guy, he has his face off, he has a new face, so he's trying to play like the cool dad, and cool dads offer their daughters cigarettes, right? Right.
Mm-hmm. None of the dads I know, but I think that on paper that's supposed to make sense in Hollywood.
Yeah, like in the 90s, Travolta, like yeah, just hey, listen, just offer the daughter a cigarette. Audiences will love it. Coolest dad ever. All right, so but this one makes like a sense to me because he is the villain playing the good guy, so he's like relishing this. Like, so the way he's smoking is naturally it's embellished for a reason.
So I just rewatched this scene. For anyone who loves the movie Face Off. Like, by the way, I think that movie still holds up beautifully, even though it's cartoonish at times. Like this, he beats the crap out of his daughter, or not really his daughter, because he's face-offing at the time. But he beats the crap out of the daughter's sort of boyfriend who's trying to take advantage of her.
The stereotypical, stereotypical movie boyfriend.
He ruins this guy in front of the girl and makes him apologize. Like he's super like tough guy in it while being smooth. Then they're inside and he like feigns consoling her, almost lets her know that like when she's dressed that way, she was asking for it. He offers her a cigarette. Yeah, all that stuff. But the thing is that I was thinking about it. I watched the scene a couple times. If he didn't have that cigarette, I'm not someone who says that smoking makes you look cool. But if he didn't have that cigarette, for some reason, it would have looked less effortless. With the cigarette, looking cool looked effortless.
Yeah.
Like, in this.
But it worked in this movie and not Face Off, because he doesn't smoke every second in Face Off. And this, like, there's a purpose to it. Like, he's sort of relishing it. Like, he's smoking.
It amplified it.
Yeah, he's smoking in the good guy's house. He's offering the good guy's daughter a cigarette. Like it kind of makes sense. Like this cigarette is a nice prop. It's not a character trait in Face Off. However, moving into Swordfish and the
Hold on now. So we've now done three movies with no facial hair.
Yeah. Oh gosh. We're moving to Swordfish with. It looks like this picture we have on the website. It looks like it's perm brushed back, and he has a landing strip on his middle of his chin. And so this is where Travolta really lost me with the smoking. Like the best way I can describe it is, all right, so in your right hand, or I guess most people are right-handed, I'm left-handed. So in your, I'm sticking with it anyway. In your right hand, pretend like you're holding a bag of popcorn, right? With your left hand, dig into it. All right. Pretend like you're just you're like a toy that grabs. You're like one of those lifts that grabs toys, right? So take your whole hand down and grab it. All right. Then flip your arm around like you're gonna put the popcorn in your mouth. Okay. And then just slam it in your face. That's
that
what
made total sense. I just did that.
Yeah, that's
I just made total sense.
That's what Travolta does. So he basically holds it between his thumb and pointer finger, but up.
And it's pointing up at the ceiling.
So he kind of turns it and he's like smoking. It's like he's doing the okay symbol upside down. And like I don't know, it's hurting my neck and shoulder right now. My neck is hurting trying to smoke the way he does. Like, I don't get it. Like,
actually, like, you know who else did that in the movie? I forgot the actor's name, but on Her Majesty's Secret Service, the guy who played Blofeld, he did the same thing. He smoked exactly the same way.
But you know what? That was probably better because it was Bond. Like,
yeah,
and he didn't have the facial hair.
He didn't have any hair.
Yeah, and but I was watching it, and I'm like, why? Like, what is he? What's he get by doing this? Like, that looks like I'm trying it right now, and it just doesn't work for me. Like, I feel like I'm going to pull my shoulder out of its socket.
Does he extract more nicotine that way or something?
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing. Like, he's just – it looks like he's face-palming himself.
It's like
– So, like, I don't know. What do you think, Lovin' Good?
So, back when this movie came out, I had smoked for about 10 years. And, of course, if you've ever smoked, you start smoking – to be cool or to fit in or something. So you spent a good bit of your life thinking about that. And then later you stop caring and you start noticing when other people do it. Now, so here's two things that make sense to me that disagree. One, if you just look at the way he's smoking cigarettes, he looks like he's trying so desperately to be different and look cool. But for some reason, the nature of his character just worked for me.
Yuck.
I mean, his character was so not quirky, weird, but just intellectually quirky that I bought it. It didn't feel totally displaced that he was doing it. It just felt displaced that anyone was doing it. Does that make sense?
No, I totally agree. Like, I'm looking at that hair. I'm looking at that landing strip he's got on his chin. I can't imagine that guy smoking a cigarette any other way.
His character sold it so well, but you can put his character in any movie or in any room in any bar ever, and it will not fit.
Right.
Yeah.
It's good acting. Everyone. That's what it is. Good acting.
It just lost.
But I mean, this is the same guy who had Hugh Jackman restrained, had a prostitute, I suppose, fillet him. And
they cracked an impossible code to crack.
Right. While he was cracking a code, and then literally had his henchman threaten him with a gun at his head if he tried to make the girl stop. Like, this is beyond super villainy crazy. This is like next level zany. Like, that, it's so weird. It's like, I want to see how you respond under pressure. Here's my test. Like, have you tested other people this way? Have they failed?
Where do I sign up for this test?
People are, like, testing.
I don't know. Like,
hey, I know another hacker named Jim. Jim wants to come in and try the test.
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, he's so over the top again that he sells the act, but the act doesn't fit anywhere. I don't know how to put it on that.
Nah, I got
he's it. So crazy, and his hair too. Like that hair, like. When I saw the trailer before I saw the movie, I was like, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to watch it. Then I saw all the explosions in the trailer. I'm like, okay, I'll watch it. Then I watched it, and I'm like, I love this, but I still hate his hair.
And so the clip is Swordfish interview process. So if you're looking for Hugh Jackman, huge act man, according to no mind. So the next one is, since we're all from the St. Pete, we're none of us are from Tampa, but we kind of get this. The last one I have here is The Punisher and the Pipe. And so The Punisher.
That sounds like a proverb or a fable.
So, you know, it's a movie that takes place in Tampa. It's a Marvel property, The Punisher, hard R rated, violent, crazy, bonkers film. So John Travolta plays a drug kingpin who lives in Tampa, Florida. And instead of smoking, you know, the famous cigar, which, you know, Ybor and Tampa is known for, he smokes a pipe. So it's like
I feel like in this movie, he was like, well, I smoked a cigarette in every way possible, so I'm just going to smoke a pipe. Like, I'm going to forget the cigar thing. I think cigars are maybe too much work for characters. I don't know. I'm not John Travolta. But, like it's just like, imagine being in a meeting with a drug kingpin, right? And you're like, hey, so how are we distributing these drugs in Tampa, St. Pete, and Sarasota? He's like, wait a second. Pulls out a pipe. Pulls out a bag, digs in the bag, pulls out some tobacco, packs it in the pipe, takes his little packer thing, goes, right? Takes the pipe, lights the pipe, takes a few times, of course, because his Zippo isn't that great. Or no, you have to do, and then he lights the pipe, and then he just sits there puffing on it. That's like a 2-minute process, and you're just waiting. Like, it would be the most annoying thing ever if I was like in a drug kingpin meeting. Like, I guess it's like a power play. But for me, I was like, you know, after being, I was already aware of his crazy smoking. So seeing the pipe, I was like, this is too much.
Yeah. Well, how does it compare to other famous pipe smoking scenes?
Like, you mean like Gandalf?
Like Gandalf? Well,
yeah, so when Gandalf does it, it feels natural because he's like a stoned wizard. But like, when John Travolta does it in this, like, it's just a character trait. There's zero, like, all right, so some character, like Sherlock Holmes or Hans Landa, Christoph Waltz in Glorious Bastards, like, you get, you know, the oversized pipe. But in this one, there's no point to it. It's just Travolta wanting to do it.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not good smoking of a pipe.
Have you guys ever tried smoking a tobacco pipe before?
Yeah, when I was in my sophomore year of college,
It's tricky to you can, because you can pack it too tight and you can't suck anything out. If you pack it too loose, you're not going to get anything at all. So
yeah, and then when you're a young kid and you don't know any better and you're in a conversation, you smoke for about 5 hours straight and you wake up the next morning and you feel like you have the inside of your mouth is gone. I quit smoking after that, but like, it's just so much work. Like, it's just. It's just such like a acting decision. Like, there's nothing natural about it. He's not Sherlock Holmes. He's John Travolta in Tampa. Like, it's just not. Smoke a cigar, dude.
Yeah.
And I guess we had a lot of phrasing in there, but whatever. Right. But it's just, I don't know. I remember I was already wary of his smoking. And then when I saw this, I was like, oh, brother.
So, final verdict on John Travolta's smoking. Yay or nay?
Oh, well, all right. So, okay. So I think according to Levengood, it's a yay because I think he likes 3 out of 5.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to say the same thing for Punisher as I did for Swordfish. You just look at Travolta, he sells that smoking, but that smoking doesn't fit in any scene, in any movie, or at any bar anywhere.
Yeah.
So I'll say that he sells the smoking. I'm just not going to say the smoking compliments the movie all the time.
There we go. So are you giving him a yay?
I'll give him a yay. He's earned it. He works hard on that smoking.
I mean, I'll give him a yay, too, because I actually noticed it.
Yeah. Like, you're giving him, like, a conditional yay.
This has been, like, one of our top 10 posts. So, I mean, like, this thing blew up. So it's like, he's been good to us.
See, for me, when it comes to smoking and acting, I have to compare it to the ultimate gold standard, Sean Connery and Dr. No.
Oh, yeah.
When James Bond is introduced, he's lighting up the cigarette, and he goes, Bond, James Bond. So I always have to compare every actor to that scene. And Travolta never comes close to that. So, yeah, I mean, he does okay, but he's no Connery. Sorry.
Sean Connery. That's the one impersonation I can do.
No, neither of you sound like that.
Yeah. Sean Connery. You know, Sean Connery could have been Gandalf. Imagine Sean Connery smoking a pipe as a stoned wizard.
Gandalf. Gandalf the Grey.
Grey. Gandalf the Grey.
He would have killed it, too. At least with the smoking part.
Grey. Gandalf the Grey. Why did I say the Grey?
That's his name.
Grey Scott.
Gandalf the Grey. And then it's Gandalf the White.
Gandalf the White. White. Gandalf the White.
Gandalf the White.
No, you shall not pass.
Then he shoots him with a Walter PPK.
All right. So the next one is probably the most important observation ever made in the world. So it's kind of world-breaking, world-shaking.
Between two Hugh Jackman movies.
Yeah. It is Kate and Leopold foreshadowed Hugh Jackman's career as Wolverine. I'll let sink in.
I feel like I was thinking that back when I saw Kate and Leopold and back before there was a Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Like, I was thinking as I was watching Kate and Leopold, who would I cast in a movie franchise to play a 5-foot-tall bodybuilder with claws coming out of his wrists? And my answer to who would play that 5-foot-tall character is a 6-foot-2 guy.
That's right. That's right. And he's been perfect. He's been great. I mean, I guess if Tom Hardy was back then, he probably could have done it. Or
he would have kicked well. You know, the funny thing is that I was a comic book fan, and I never liked Wolverine until Hugh Jackman played Wolverine.
Nice. I don't want to listen to more Tom Hardy grunting. All right, but this is what we got with the point. So the first one is, in Kate and Leopold, there's 5 points. And they're weird. But Hugh Jackman is related to Liev Schreiber in Kate and Leopold and X-Men Origins. So in Kate and Leopold, Liev Schreiber plays a distant relative who time travels with Jackman from 1876 to 2001. In X-Men Origins, Wolverine, Schreiber plays Jackman's half-brother, and they kill many people from 1845 to 2009. They've come
Which is the same as traveling through time, because they lived it.
That's right. So they've covered a lot of ground and time together while being related. You might need a few minutes, guys. You might need a few minutes, all right? And they also were in the movie 43, that movie 43, which was terrible. Hugh Jackman had balls on his neck. So, all right, so Hugh Jackman was related to Liev Schreiber in Kate and Leopold and X-Men Origins.
And they both traveled through time.
Both traveled through time. Second, James Mangold, the director of Kate and Leopold, also directed the terrible Wolverine.
And when you told me that, by the way, I was stunned that the dude who did Kate and Leopold, which was – I love that movie. I love it. I think that movie's fantastic. He did this romantic, quirky movie. He did the Wolverine? Like, how did he get that job?
Well, I think they remained friends. And James Mangold also did 310 to Yuma, which I like a lot. But it's like such a weird –
That's awesome. Yeah. That's gritty.
I mean, I think the Wolverine is a huge misstep. Like, the weird – Green Lady, and then like the stupid CGI at the end, and like the henchman advice. What episode is henchman advice?
Oh God, that was like that might have been 44.
Yeah, listen to that. So
45 people.
So we have Liev Schreiber, who is a relative to him in X-Men Origins and Kate and Leopold. Then we have James Mangold, who directed Kate and Leopold and the Wolverine. Boom. Three, time travel. Wait.
Got more. You've got more.
Yep. Time travel has played a big part in Hugh Jackman's career. So Leopold found himself transported from 1876 to 2001. In X-Men Days of Future Past, Wolverine traveled from 2003 to 1973. Boom.
Did their like time travel planes cross each other?
I believe so. I think so. I do. I think they had – because, I mean, they're all kind of buddies. Like, you know when you're, like, walk by somebody on a trail or you run by them, like, you kind of give them a wave? That's what time-traveling people do. All right, so we have Liev Schreiber, James Mangold, and time travel. So that's where the Wolverine stops, but here's some more random things. Leopold isn't happy when he is asked to peddle pond scum butter in Kate and Leopold. In 2013, he found himself sculpting butter in the movie Butter. So he went from promoting to sculpting butter. No other actor on the planet can say this. And Leopold had a problem selling crappy butter. However, in Butter, he was paid money to fix a butter statue.
And now you gave us those scene links on YouTube. And what I also noticed is that Leopold reluctantly sold butter. And Hugh Jackman and Butter reluctantly lied about sculpting something for someone else.
That's right. And I mean, there's a lot of reluctancy with Butter in these films. So not only has it informed Wolverine, his career as Wolverine, but it's also got him a movie in Butter.
which wasn't, I bet that wasn't lost on him.
I mean, I think I saw this published actually in an academic journal. Yeah. They coined the term the reluctant butter correlation. I mean, there are links to Nixon and George Washington. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, I mean, Liza Minnelli, Charlie Chaplin.
Everyone knew that Charlie Chaplin had something going on.
Edgar Allan Poe.
With butter.
Yeah. So the last fact I have, probably the biggest fact out of all of them, that, you know, might change your life, is Hugh Jackman and his Kate and Leopold co-star have both fake cinematic orgasms in movies taking place in the 1980s. This one is a stretch. So in the wonderful film Eddie the Eagle, I saw it a couple weeks ago, Jackman lets loose with like a full-on fake orgasm to inspire Eddie. And then one has to wonder if Meg Ryan, you know, who's in When Harry Met Sally, had some tips after a stellar fake orgasm in that movie. So not only did Hugh Jackman have be related to Liebschreiber, worked with James Mangold, time traveled, dealt with butter, and both he and Meg Ryan have faked massive on-screen orgasms. Boom.
I buy it.
I mean, listen, what other movie can you trace this many things into an actor's future? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot, but don't look into it because then you'll wreck my hypothesis.
I won't.
Yeah, so our next podcast is proving Mark wrong. All right, so the next one is kind of something that it started a lot of my research off, actually. I started looking at Jason Statham movie posters, and then I started moving into action movie posters, and that kind of jumped us into a whole lot of other things. But I came up with a Jason Statham movie theory after the movie Homefront. And the theory is this. See, I think this is kind of what I based on. I think the Transporter kind of destroyed Jason Statham as an actor, because before he was doing that, he was really great in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch, The Bank Job. Those are movies where he actually acted, and he wasn't like this.
Wait, was The Bank Job before The Transporter?
Well, it was after, which is the one lone exception. But he, like, before Transporter, he was kind of like this everyday guy. You know, in Snatch, he would swing a baseball bat, but he would just get beat up. He wasn't like the fighter. He was like the – he was tough, but he was more like humorous and had fun with his roles and wasn't like the almighty badass who refused to lose a fight to Vin Diesel in Furious 7, so they use a lot of stunt doubles. So I started looking into his movie posters, and I started noticing something about how his posters told a story. Actually, I did that for Nicholas Sparks too, all his posters. So he started off looking blue collar and transformed into a suave man who wears a suit and shoots guns like jumping in the air. And so I broke down his movie posters, and there's a pattern afoot. I figured out how to gauge whether a Jason Statham film is going to be good or not. Spy is one exception, but he's the supporting character. So I compiled 34 of his posters, the main theatrical posters, and I put them through the data, you know, ringer. I broke down the posters to various Statham coats, outfits, and found a world-changing discovery. Well, I mean, world-changing. So the average Rotten Tomato score for all Jason Statham films is 41.35. And the audience score is 56.38. Now, movie posters, so the average critical score is 41%, right? And audience score is 56. And a movie poster where he's wearing an overcoat, right? The critic score is 70.25 and the audience score is 78. So if he's on a movie poster wearing like an overcoat, the movie's going to be good. However,
okay, I've got a question. I want to stop you right there. When he's wearing an overcoat, is he a more minor character? In other words, is he not the star of the movie when he's wearing an overcoat?
Yeah, these are more ensemble pieces, but he has a big role. I mean, I think in Snatch, he might be the main character. He might get the most screen time. But I'm just saying the best the best movies that he's in. So he was in these great ensemble pieces where, you know, his best movies arguably are Spy. I mean, Transporter's the lone exception, but Spy, Snatch, Lockstock, movies that actually had him acting. However, after Transporter, where he has a suit,
transporting, I don't know, it's a jumper movie, I don't know. But when he has a suit, a cardigan, or jackets, the score is 41.25, and the audience score is 52%. So when he's not part of an ensemble, and when he's headlined in a movie, his movies are below the average. Crank and Transporter buoyed the score because those are fun films. Then they weren't wrecked by, like, the Jason Statham suit persona. But the rest of them, Crank, Safe, Redemption, Revolver, Chaos, Transporter 1 through 3, 13, Parker, Homefront, Cellular, Blitz, Italian Job, Crank 2, London, Killer Elite, and Wild Card. He has, like, a suit, or he's looking kind of suave. When he's in military garb, like the Expendables, it's 40% critic score, 51% audience. So that's
close to regular.
Yeah. Let's see. And then when he has medieval guard, it's 4%. So that's in the name of the king. And when he's and when he's in a movie and he's not on the poster, it's 32.5%. So, when he's in a one-piece jumpsuit, it's 38.5. So the only time that it's above the average is when he is part of an ensemble cast.
Wait, so, I know the answer, but tell the listeners what movie or movies he's in a one-piece jumpsuit on the poster, because I'm sure they're curious.
Death Race and Mean Machine.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and so, and then In the Name of the King is his 4%. If you want to watch a movie that is good, has a better chance of being good with Jason Statham in it, look at the box and see if he's wearing an overcoat.
But wouldn't that also mean that if you want to watch a movie where Jason Statham is good, make sure he gets less screen time?
Yes. So
that's sad. I don't like that.
Yeah, but see,
I like Jason Statham.
Transporter wrecked his career because Transporter was good. And so
Transporter was great some ways.
Exactly, in some ways. But it established him as a butt-kicking – he's great. You know, I was listening to the Spy commentary. I'm a nerd. But the stunt coordinator said that Jason Statham is the best actor he's ever worked with in terms of learning stunt choreography. So the guy is great with stunts. But the problem is he did Transporter, right, where he was kind of monosyllabic. And then he went to Transporter 1 and 2. And then he started doing these other movies where he was kind of, headlining. But then he would try to kind of add some, like, emotions to it, like Wild Card, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to see a good Jason Statham movie, watch the ones where he's part of an ensemble.
You know, it's kind of funny because he was, like, an amazingly dangerous fighter in Mean Machine, but it was such a minor role. Like, he might have had 10 minutes of screen time in Mean Machine with Vinnie Jones. Yeah. But that was before – that was his first movie where he ever fought and was a good fighter.
Yeah.
And he was, like, Transporter good, even though it was very brief. It was in a fantasy, like a dream sequence. Mm-hmm. But, like, man.
Yeah, you know, I just
– Transporter – I love Transporter. It's so angering that Transporter did that.
Yeah, I mean, that's my theory. You know, who knows if it's true or not? I mean, Crank, they're different films, but they kind of establish this, like, thing that he doesn't really want to shy away from. And when he breaks free from that mold, and, you know, I like the Expendables movies, whatever, they're their own beast. But when he breaks free of the Statham persona, like in Spy, that movie got nominated for Best Comedy Golden Globe Award. It was, like, 80-90% Rotten Tomatoes. So when he kind of breaks free from what the Transporter started, he's better in those movies. This is the kind of stuff I think about, people. So that's it. That's my randomness.
Nice.
And also, but Samuel Jackson has really weird hair when he plays a villain. So if you think about, like, Unbreakable, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Jumper. Kingsman, he wears a Kangol the whole time. So just pay attention to Sam Jackson's bad guy hair.
I think I will.
Do it.
Yeah. Well, I think that was sufficiently random, right? Like, it was just random enough.
I mean, I compared Kate and Leopold to his career as Wolverine, so...
Yeah. All right.
It's going to change your life.
Yeah, literally. It'll change your life. But you'll be a Wall Street banker. You watch the movie or listen to this podcast, and you'll be farming beets the next day.
I mean, listen,
this will open your eyes to trends. So you'll start by looking at posters of Jim Varney from Ernest, the Ernest movies. Then you'll start looking at stock portfolios. You know, then you'll start like, you know, this will open up your world to, you know, another world. And then you can only grow from there.
Right. Yeah.
Send your checks to Movies, Films, and Flicks.
All right. Hey, speaking of checks, do we have any plugs you want to make for us?
Yeah, send us checks.
Yeah.
Movies, Films, and Flicks, please download the podcast. Subscribe, rate, review. We just want to build that up. And also, just thank you for listening. I mean, I know you're spending your time with us, and hopefully we can bring you enough randomness to keep you listening.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, normally I plug Twitter and everything, but I kind of like the grace that came with that closing. I want to leave it be. You're kind of in your element there.
Yeah.
White. Gandalf the White.
Yeah, and whatever. Check out like the Shark Dropper shit too, because they don't suck either and they produce us.
Yeah. they're 100th episode. I don't know if you guys want to listen to that.
Guys, my major endorsement, they don't suck. Yeah. And by the way, all three of us are in the 100th episode.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy. Yeah. Warning.
Almost as random as this one.
That's right.
I'm talking about Oscar controversy. Mark is making analogies between Life According to Jim and their podcast. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, check it out. All right, guys, for my co-host Mark Hoffmeyer.
Stargate.
John Lemmingood.
Kurt Russell film.
94.
I've been your host, John Oswald. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
What?
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.